All righty, ladies and gentlemen, automotive enthusiast friends from all around the planet Earth, you've done it once again. You've pressed play on the very first
Anodyne episode of V8 Radio, Kevin.
Anodyne episode for 2021. I'm your host, Kevin Oste, joined as always by our esteemed co-host, Mr. Mike Cuball Clark. And I got to ask you, what does anodyne mean?
Anodyne means helpful in lessening or relieving pain. And oh, Lord awesome. Knows we've had a painful 2020.
We have. So hopefully this show can relieve that pain and be helpful.
Absolutely. That's
the goal. Those are like two things that normally don't go together. You know, something that's helpful also relieves pain. You know, it's like an Advil that cleans your garage for you.
I'd buy two of those.
Oh, yeah. I'd take them by the fistful, man.
Amen.
All right. Well, it's a brand new year, getting things going. As we record this show, it's actually January 1, so this is ground floor of the 2020 experience. But one thing that's not going to change is that as we launch each episode of V8 Radio, we always start off with an automotive trivia question of some sort, and we hold the answers until the end of the show as a fun way to keep the interest of our listeners who have not figured out that you can fast forward through this and get right to the end yet.
You can't. Yeah. We're setting a bot that's going to prevent that. So right. Sorry, no fast forwarding.
Did I say that out loud? So, Mr. Cuball, have you prepared a trivia question that's worthy of a brand new year?
Indeed, I have. And I have to give credit to our friends at Hagerty for this question. As this was one of our trivia question night questions.
Except do I get multiple choice like you did?
No, absolutely not. that will not change in 2021. We will not have multiple choice.
Uh-huh. All right.
I think you'll get it, though, if you just just think about it for a while. Okay, Kevin and listener, which auto manufacturer uses odd serial numbers to identify a car for road use and even serial numbers to identify a car for competition use?
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Serial numbers?
Correct.
Serial numbers. Like VIN.
Well, if that's the way you want to say it.
Well, I mean, not like model number.
Correct.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, VIN number.
I'm going to say that's the Ford Motor Company.
Ford Motor Company, Kevin says. And what led you to that answer?
Well, it was really the culmination of a bunch of thoughts that I had that all said, I have no freaking idea. And I'm trying to think of different VINs, and I know I'm wrong, but I can't see, as I think this out, I can't see the major automakers having enough ability to sort out that this is supposed to be a competition vehicle, and what would that be?
Okay.
You know, so you can buy... You can buy like a from GM, for example, a Chevrolet, a Copo Camaro body in white, but that doesn't have a VIN.
Correct.
So it's not that. And then if it's like a Ferrari or something, that makes a little more sense. So maybe that's more the correct answer, a more boutique auto manufacturer that does a lot of race cars, you know, and has the ability to differentiate. And knowing that this was a Hagerty question, it could be more in a global stage.
Oh, your mind is working, man.
Yeah. Did I say that Ford was my final answer?
You did not say it was your final answer.
All right, well, this is going to be Ford versus Ferrari, and I'm going Ferrari.
Right on. All right. So is that your final answer?
That is.
All right. So Kevin says Ferrari.
It took a long way to get there, but...
Oh, I like the journey you took, though. Duly noted for 2021.
Nice. All right. I've got one for you that I don't know the correct answer.
Oh, well, that's fantastic. Yeah. Well, then I'm going to be correct.
Well, maybe, maybe not. This is more of a question that the answer is based in kind of mythology. I mean, I don't know that there is a correct answer, but there's a widely accepted correct correctness.
All right.
So the answer is, right. We'll start with the question. Thank you for that.
I'm here for man.
I'm still trying to memorize, you know, recall memorized VINs, you know, what's an odd number. You are no doubt familiar with the small block Chevy V8 engine.
I've seen one or two of those in my day, yes.
Right. And they have a nickname.
Uh-huh.
And the nickname is the mouse motor, right?
Okay.
And of
Damn
course,
it, I thought that was going to be the question.
No, it's not. The big block Chevy is, also has a nickname of the rat. Mm-hmm. So where did that nickname come from, the mouse motor?
Okay.
We're just going for the mouse. The rat is a little more obvious, but where do you think the name, the mouse motor?
Okay. Well, I think the difference is, the big block and the small block are physically different in size, and a rat is larger than a mouse. The mouse motor came from the mouse motor came from the camp of Big Daddy Ed Roth, who was known as the Rat Fink, and he called the Chevrolet small block the mouse motor.
Okay.
Because the dashboard was straight and it didn't have all the swoops.
Right.
Oh my gosh.
So
starting out 2021 on a high note.
Yeah, I think both of us are here. So Big Daddy Ed Roth, who was a cultural icon, a customizer, an artist, kind of a beatnik. He was known as the Rat Fink, named after his character that he created.
Correct.
Which adorned t-shirts. I think he was the first guy actually to sell personalized airbrush t-shirts.
Makes sense.
Go to events and ask your name and, you know, what car you like, and it would airbrush your name on the t-shirt. And he was the first guy to do that, and then hired a bunch of other artists because he couldn't keep up. So there was like guys like Robert Williams, I think, did some work for him. And anyway, so you thought that one day he was strolling past his local Chevrolet dealer and there was a hood open and he said, you know, I'm the Rat Fink. And that right there, my friend, is a mouse motor.
It's a mouse motor. Absolutely. It's plausible.
It is. Without a doubt.
If not completely off base, it's plausible.
Okay. Yeah. Ed Newton did a lot of work for him, too, now that I think about it. Okay. So that is that your final answer?
Yeah. Daggone it. It's my final answer.
Right on.
Send it to the internet.
It's been duly noted. All right. Well, we will find out at the end of the show, my friends.
I can't wait.
Pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah. So here we are. We kicked 2020 to the curb, and there's a lot of different feelings out there. You know, there's people excited about 2021 and let's move on. And of course the COVID thing and here in the U.S. we're going to have a regime change and all these different things. What's your take? What do you think?
Well, because it's 2021, you know, things aren't just going to magically change. We still have to keep plugging along. There's a new strain of coronavirus that's hit the U.S. that we have to worry about that's even more contagious. We do have a regime change, so there's going to be differences happening there. We do have a vaccine though for the coronavirus, which is good news. My take is we still need to keep working hard, keep plugging along, and I mean, not expect any miracles overnight. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of it.
I agree. I think I'm kind of tipping my toes in the water here on 2021 and not just jumping in because I don't trust anything at this point.
I don't either, man. I tell you what.
We were sitting at our neighbor's house last night enjoying a nice dinner, and we've been over there for the past 5 or 6 years for New Year's Eve and getting ready to watch the ball drop. And this year we're just like, yeah, you know, it's just not there.
Yeah.
And seeing the vacant Times Square in New York on TV.
I wasn't even able to watch. Was it vacant?
Well, what they did is they had these inflatable, you know, like what like the base of an inflatable bounce house.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's like a thing you can stand in that's inflatable with like a little fence around it, a little, you know, barrier. Uh-huh. And those were probably 8 feet square and they were black, and they had those, they called them party pods, and they had these little pods dotted up and down the street in Times Square. And they had certain people who somehow obtained the right to be in those. So there's like two people hanging out in each one, and they've got masks on and whatever.
Oh, wow.
And the host would walk up and down the street and talk to him every once in a while. So it went from like, you know, I guess a million plus people to a handful of these party pods and, you know, people standing in them.
And oh my gosh.
You know, obviously it was really not the same.
Right. Yeah.
But it's weird stuff, you know. So I'm just hoping, of course, the same way you are, that the vaccine ends up working and we can kind of start to get back to normal. I'm just really hoping that some of the events can occur again this year that didn't.
Oh, yeah. There's a few that come to mind that I'm looking forward to should they happen again. Macaque can be in one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for you, I want the SEMA show to go back on next November.
Yeah, totally.
Just all the outdoor shows. I mean, my local town of Plainfield, Illinois, has a cruise night every Tuesday night in the summertime. And, you know, that really didn't happen. And I'm hoping that kind of kicks back in full swing as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, tons of automotive events that I'd love to see again.
Yeah, I mean, we're hoping Hot Rod Power Tour comes back.
That too, because daggone it, I want to drive in that this year.
Yeah, yeah, you got a little pass because of it getting canceled.
Yeah,
but now you got the parts to get the car together for the most part, and
yep,
that could actually happen.
Yeah, I ordered the last push of all the minutia that I think I'm going to need. And that should be here on Tuesday, so I can start, you know, really pushing forward.
Right on.
With this. Yeah, I'm excited.
Sometimes it's that minutia that gets you.
Oh, all day. It's the last 5% that takes 90% to do.
Yeah, yeah. So like what, hoses and?
Hoses, belts, fuel line from the fuel pump to the carburetor, fuel filter, throttle return spring. I realized I didn't have, because I went from a Edelbrock carb back to a correct Rochester carb. So the bracket is different that I needed. The throttle return spring is different. The PCV system is different. So I ordered all the correct plumbing and pieces for that makes it all period correct.
Is that going to be a heat stove choke?
No, it normally is, but, the heads I used are late model Trans Am heads. So, second gen Trans Am heads, and the heat crossover is different. So they were blocked.
That's right. You got that electric choke conversion.
Correct. I picked up an electric choke conversion for the Quadrajet.
Yeah.
So hopefully that works out okay too.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to figure out where to wire that in.
Yeah. It just needs to be a switched, 12 volts and, should be in good shape.
Some people take power from the wiper motor.
Ah, that's a good spot.
It is a good spot. It's pretty close. There's already some spade terminals on there. You can put a little Y, you know, doubler on that and plug right in.
That's a good call.
Yeah, good tech tip here today.
Hey, right
See,
on.
See, the show is worth listening to after all.
Your tech tip of the day.
Yeah. I noticed online that some of the Hot Rod Power Tour groups, the natives are getting restless. You know, they really want to do this.
Oh, I believe
And it's pretty interesting because people are just proposing to do their own crews now. They're just like, hey, if this ain't going to happen again, what's stopping 50 of us or 100 of us from getting together and drawing a route and just hitting the road? And
yeah,
it has been pointed out that that's a little naive because one of the things that the event staff does is coordinate with hotels and cities and everything, because that influx of people and cars, mm-hmm. you know, has an impact. But it's certainly an option, and it would be a lot of fun. I mean, there's nothing stopping you from hitting the road. So
that's true. I mean, and coordinating hotels could be done on a much lower scale, on a smaller scale, if one person who's good at that kind of thing just takes the reins and say, okay, we're going to go to Nashville and then Louisville and then, you know, Chicago and then a few other states. If they call hotels in the area and mm-hmm. try to reserve some rooms, then, I mean, I don't see why they couldn't do it. Obviously, they don't need to book, you know, 100 or 200 rooms at a time and put down a huge deposit for that, which I'm sure the people at the Power Tour have to do. But if they get, you know, 20 of their 20 buddies and say everyone doubles up in a room, we need to block 10 rooms off at each place, I'm sure that's very doable.
Oh, totally. And the other difference would be that they wouldn't be renting some giant venue for the big end of day show. Mm-hmm. But you know, if you don't need it, you got like you said, 50 or 100 people, you'd have a great time right there in the hotel parking lot.
You sure would. Lots of burnouts.
Yes, that's what happens. Which they're a little bit safer if you're wearing your mask. You know, you don't
absolutely
inhale so much tire smoke.
Certainly.
Yeah. So yeah, all of those things, it would be sweet. But I think what we're seeing at this point, at least I am, is things are still kind of on hold, maybe until May or June.
That's kind of what I'm thinking as well.
Yeah. So I really want, go ahead.
So that said, I don't even know are the Hot Rod Power Tour people even coordinating anything at this point?
I don't know. I know people over there, but I don't know what they're doing at this point. And these event companies, you know, imagine what it's like sitting on your hands.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be nerve-wracking.
It's brutal.
Yeah.
Especially when you go, if you had a big schedule of different things to do all year, and then all of a sudden they all just got unplugged. So it's kind of spooky. You know, I really want 2021 to turn that corner and kind of get back to normal. But, you know, like you're saying, it reminds me of some of those people that had very rocky relationships and that, you know, saying, as soon as we're married, this is all fixed.
You know what we need to fix our relationship? We need to have a kid.
That's right. Yeah. Everything will change. Trust me. So,
oh, brother.
Yeah. Another thing that I'm hoping gets tuned up, and in some ways it seems a little more feasible because 2020 gave time to practice, if you will, but some of the manufacturing and the parts availability for cars, I'm hoping becomes more available in 2021. We at V8 Speed and Resto have been waiting for months on some parts and, you know, you get somebody who calls up and they're like, hey, I'd love to do, whatever, a fuel injection conversion or an LS swap or a suspension redo. Or in fact, right now we're talking with a guy who's got a great idea about doing a Monte Carlo. This 72, it's been in the family since the very beginning. So now it's time to do the car. And unfortunately, it had sat in a field or in the mud, so it's kind of rusty up to the rockers.
Yeah.
So the first thought was, let's get a new chassis, you know?
Okay.
And you and I talked a long time ago about a Monte Carlo idea that I had. And I basically just took that idea and shared it with this guy, and he's totally on board. So pending the financial availability, you know, we're talking a supercharged LSA motor, you know, possible like a Roadster shop chassis, you know, Wilwood brakes, Hydra Boost, and then some cool details inside, like taking the stock dash, but wrapping it in leather with a French stitch that's nice and clean. And then Monte Carlos are similar to Chevelles. You know, maybe we take a Chevelle console and put it between the buckets and wrap that in leather too. And just make this a, you know, put some forge line wheels on it and everything and make it a very classy road car. You know, that's kind of the idea. And he was like, our friend Brian Stupski at Problem Child Customs had a design rendering that he did for somebody else of a black Monte Carlo. And I kind of borrowed that and put it in this presentation for our customer. And I said, you know, Brian did this for somebody else, but this is kind of the look that I'm thinking. And our customer was like, I love all this. This is what I want.
Yes.
Dare I ask what this is going to cost? You know? And I said, well, you know, so the first thing we do is put together a parts list. And it's like, well, here's the big ticket items, you know, the LSA, a 6-speed automatic, because he wants an automatic, you know, the rear suspension and all that stuff.
The chassis. Yeah.
So if those parts are obtainable in his budget, you know, then maybe it's an opportunity to move on. So to do our due diligence, we called the Roadster shop and we asked them about doing the chassis, and they don't have an off the shelf spec series chassis for a Monte Carlo. They've got Chevelles, but the Monte Carlo's got a longer nose. So it's a little bit different. So they're like, well, you know, you're going to have to pay us to do some engineering time to design the front half. And then it's going to be like 16 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, man. So, you know, okay. So, our customer called, Jeff Schwartz at Schwartz Performance to see about a chassis, because he's got one for the Monte Carlo. And, it's kind of a different way to go than the Roadster shop with the type of suspension and whatnot, but still a great option. And he's like 14 to 16 weeks. So for somebody that wants to get going like right now, you can't. And we're talking about doing this car in phases. You know, maybe we do the chassis first. So, you know, today I'm going to have a conversation with the guy about the desired usage of the car. And if he really needs that Roadster shop chassis or that Schwartz chassis, because we might be able to get, well, I know we can get a Western original Monte Carlo chassis that's not all rusty.
Tighten it up.
Yeah, like SpeedTech sells a kit that reinforces, you know, all of the chassis.
All
it's
the
got
points.
Yeah, crossbars and
yep,
and do all that fun stuff. And, you know, we could powder coat the whole thing and be done with it. And we could start that today.
Ooh.
So it's just a matter of what the needs are. But some of these lead times are brutal.
Yeah, that is brutal. I mean, at one point you have to be honest. As a customer, you have to be honest with yourself as to, you know, what your use is going to be. Is it going to autocross this thing for, you know, at a high level? Does he need that Roadster shop chassis? Eh, maybe not. And I mean, you make a good point of that about maybe we just use a stock chassis and tighten it up and make it good. Make it what you want.
We could probably make it 75% as good as those other chassis. But you know as well as I, the whole project is not something anybody needs.
Right. Yeah.
It's something you want.
I get it. Yeah.
And he's at a point in his life where he can do it. So the last thing I want to do is discourage the man's wants. But because of the timing and some of this stuff today, you really got to consider these alternatives. just to get the thing done, you know, or to get it started anyway.
Yep. Yep.
Never mind the fact that if we went with a stock chassis and reinforced it and added some stuff to it and then did like a Global West suspension system with, you know, tubular upper and lower control arms, mm-hmm. and a you know, a Curry rear end or something, or even Detroit Speed stuff or whoever, mm-hmm. It's going to be a much lower financial investment than going with the other chassis. But sure. But yeah, so, you know, that's been jamming us up on getting cars finished, you know, because you end up waiting for something that's silly. And we try to plan for this stuff in advance in the beginning, like this conversation right now. It's like, okay, well, we don't have the car in our shop yet. We're not working on it. This is just the initial conversation about feasibility. Mm-hmm. And if we land on the plan and we can order all those parts, we don't need to bring the car in until this stuff gets here.
Correct.
And then we can get to work. But what the difference is people bring us cars for one project, and then halfway through they say, okay, well, this went great. Why don't we add this? Let's add vintage air to it while it's there. And it's like, well, that's 6 weeks out.
Yeah.
And it's, oh man. So now you got a car that's half apart and you got to store it.
And you can't finish it now.
Can't finish it. Makes no sense to put it back together and take it apart again.
Yeah, I can see that really jamming you up a lot.
It's a logistical nightmare. Yeah. And we haven't been terrible at managing it because we're fortunate that we're dealers and we can buy direct from manufacturers and we mm-hmm. can, you know, usually get to the front of the line on a lot of this stuff. And Brian, our parts guy, is really good at tracking stuff down from other sources.
Perfect.
And with the caveat that sometimes, you know, you're going to pay more for something because you might not be able to buy it as well. But it's here, you know, and it allows the project to move forward. So it's worth it.
Sure. Yeah. So that's great.
Yeah, it is. But what I was saying before, this has been going on all year through 2020. And it seems to me that a lot of these manufacturers have now, hopefully, they've been figuring out ways to manage this throughout the year and learning to, you know, have the appropriate staff and work with the closures and the stay-at-home orders and
right.
staffing and resources and all the rest of it, so that maybe in 2021, those timelines start to shorten a little bit.
Yeah, I really hope for that. I mean, on a non-automotive front, I was experiencing that, you know, when we talked about this, when I was building my deck, which mm-hmm. passed final inspection, by the way. So
yeah, right on
for me. Trying to get deck boards and all the lumber I needed took months and months and months. And I finally had to source it from a different lumber yard who happened to have all this stuff, because the place I was dealing with, where you always save more money, was not able to get
what I needed. Was that Solozzi Edelson Chevrolet?
Yeah. Where you save big money, excuse me.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Where you always save big money. And we always save more money.
That's right. Two guys that look like they're straight out of the mob and from the Chevrolet dealership.
Because they were straight out of the mob.
Yes. At the end of the commercial, they would be talking about, you know, buy this 1982 Chevy Citation, just $28.95. Next, we got a 83 Chevrolet Beauville van that you can have for just $4,200. And at the end of the commercial, they say, come to Solozzi Edelson Chevrolet. And they both hold up fistfuls of $100 bills. And they would together say, where you always save more money. And I always thought that they left out the part where it's like, come to Solozzi Edelson Chevrolet, or we'll break both your legs.
You know? I'm sure that's what they felt in their hearts.
Yeah. Those commercials are awesome. There's a couple on YouTube. You can go look them up.
Oh, they are great.
Yeah. So anyway, that's not where you got your lumber from.
No, thank God. Because both my legs are intact.
Yeah, and they'd be coming to get it back by now.
No doubt. But yeah, I finally had to go somewhere else and just... Because I paid for everything up front, all the materials, And they actually tried to swindle me a little bit because I went back and I said, I just need a few more framing pieces for the lumber. I don't even need the deck boards yet. But they said, oh, yeah, we finally have this stuff in stock. I'm like, oh, well, thanks for calling me and letting me know. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And so they printed out the order of what I needed, and there was a price tag on there. And I said, I'm like, well, I'm not going to have to pay for this. I already paid for it. And the prices had increased significantly since I bought this stuff. And the guy's hemming and hawing a little bit, and he says, well, you're going to have to pay the difference. I'm like, I'm absolutely not going to have to pay the difference, my friend, because I already paid it, and you owe it to me, and blah, blah, blah. And it just went on and on and on, and I said, let's just process a return for everything, because I'm not going to do this. So,
wow, yeah.
Yeah, so I got turned on to another place that had everything, and I ordered it from them.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of a crappy thing to do to somebody.
Yeah, it is. I'm like, how can you not understand what we need to do here? But but the lead time for that was ridiculous. I ordered it in July, and I ended up waiting until like September, October before I got all the pieces I needed to complete this thing. So
right. And that the construction industry is on a totally different scale than, you know, on our specialty equipment,
right,
automotive enthusiast part side, because everybody was doing projects and building, and none of the producers were able to make the stuff.
Right.
You know, but I guess that's similar to what happened when COVID hit. People went out in their garage and worked on their cars and started ordering parts. So you have that factor as well.
Yeah.
So again, having gone through all that, I'm really hoping that this stuff kind of frees up a little bit throughout 2021, because
it has to. It has to.
It's tough, you know. And, and you know, interestingly, we're in a position at the shop right now too, where three or four people have come to us for engine builds.
Mm-hmm.
Brought the car, we pull the engine, and we don't do engine machine work in house. We work with a couple of machinists that we've talked about in the past.
Yep.
But those guys are jammed up for months and months and months.
Oh, boy.
So you pull the engine. We've got a 68 Dodge Coronet 500 in the shop. Beautiful car. Original family owner. It's green.
Sweet.
It's very, very nice. It was restored a few years ago on the outside. He brought it to us to do an underhood restoration and to rebuild the 383 because it was just worn out. So we pulled the engine and sent it out, and we thought, okay, this is great. We have a good local engine shop that we've recently built a good relationship with, and they appreciate us as customers, and they know what they're going to get from us as far as our expectations, and it's different from somebody who's never done this before and shows up saying, well, I don't know what I need, or, you know, we're just, you know, this is what we need.
Yeah.
We're going to do a roller cam conversion.
Yeah.
Clean up everything else. Screw it back together. So we're like, great. We can yank the motor, drop it off at the shop. And then in the meantime, we'll do the underhood restoration, which is on a Mopar. The inner fenders are all the same color as the body.
Body color, yeah.
So we did some sanding and stripping work, and that required taking the wiring harnesses out and the, you know, the wiper motor and all that kind of stuff. We actually took the grill out and did the core support and everything. And it was very nice because this car didn't require a lot of metal work, because sometimes these Mopars are hiding rust patches and those inner fenders, and that takes time. And the short version is that the underhood restoration is finished. It's done. It's painted. It's beautiful.
Cool.
Jeff, our painter, did a wonderful job on color matching the exterior with this metallic green. And now it's going to wait. It's going to wait for the motor.
Oh, boy.
And it's just a thing, you know. So now you got a car sitting there. And luckily, you know, the owners are sympathetic because they know that everything's just taking longer.
That's helpful.
Yeah. It just... It makes it challenging to have workflow throughout the shop when you hang up the phone and it's like, oh, great. Well, that's going to take 12 weeks to get to the next step.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure the logistics of keeping track of all that is just very daunting at at best?
Well, I think the big challenge is when you start to source from multiples. You know, because if we would normally, you know, again, to use Vintage Air, for example, if we call them and say, we need a Vintage Air kit for a 72 Corvette, and they say, sure, and send it out. If they say, no, we don't have one, you know, then you got to start going to other sources, warehouse distributors and whatnot. And then you got to play the game of, okay, well, this guy's got it, but it's going to be 9 weeks. And then we call this guy and he's got it, but it's going to be 5 weeks, and keep track of all those. Yeah. So you're doing multiple work for the same part.
Yeah. And when you've got
a bunch of cars, that's where it becomes very important and critical to be able to track all this stuff. And we have software that keeps things on pace and spreadsheets and everything. And like I said, Brian does a really good job of navigating all this somehow, because that's not my deal. I wouldn't.
Right.
Yeah. That would make my head spin. But
no doubt. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I mean, you have good people that are able to navigate all this for you, so that's cool.
It is. And then, you know, kind of talking about other events, I got a Happy New Year text from our buddy Yardley.
Oh, right on. As did I. Yes, I did.
Yeah, one of our super fans here at VA Radio. Mm-hmm. And he just says he just wants to race 21. That's his whole thing. You know, and he's got his 69 Riviera that runs 12s.
That's crazy.
He takes it to the strip and he runs this thing and beats the snot out of it and really has a great time. And that all got turned off last year. So
yeah, that stinks. I mean, it's really hitting everybody.
So. Yeah.
We're pulling for you, Yards. We want you to race, too.
That's it. And win.
And win. Not just race. You better win. We want to see some trophies, buddy.
That's it. So, you know, all we got to do is wait and see. And I turn the other way and say, well, what can we do to contribute to 2021 going smoother for everybody? You know, is there something that our business can do in our shop and our people and our presence in the world? So maybe we, you know, and we've been doing it, but approaching these projects to where we talk to a customer and say, hey, I know you're bringing this thing in for the engine build, but what else is on your horizon that you're just kicking around? Let's discuss this now, because if it's in the cards, let's get this stuff ordered.
Let's do it. Yeah.
Yeah. And if not, that's fine. But as opposed to step one and then wait, and step two and then wait, and step three.
Yeah.
So
let's get all three steps going at the same time.
Sure.
And get this out, you know, 5 months sooner than it would have if we do it step one, wait, step two, wait, step three, wait.
That's it.
So,
who knows? We all just got to keep working together and plugging away, man.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
And just have to be understanding that, you know, there's going to be setbacks, and all we can do is, you know, try to anticipate as best as possible and work with each other to avoid those pitfalls.
So hopefully by mid-year, you know, like we're thinking, the virus is more contained and production is ramped up and everything. You know.
That would be great.
It would be great.
That would be great. Oh, man.
So we know that... you've got your goals for the GTO to get that thing running again soon. You and I were talking the other day about the 53 Chevy panel model kit.
Yeah.
That is part of my history that I found again online. So I don't know if I gave you the whole story on this, but when I was a kid, I had a neighbor kid. I'm talking like we're six. We're like in kindergarten, first grade, something like that.
Yeah.
And we're playing over at his house, and in his like kind of basement closet area, one day he happens to pull out this model kit, and it's a 1953 Chevy panel, you know, like a sedan delivery, which is a station wagon with no side windows. And it's a gasser, right? So it's got a supercharged engine and, you know, straight axle.
Axle lifted up,
yep. And it's painted in this crazy red, white, and blue striped color scheme. I mean, it looks like, you know, Evel Knievel meets Captain America.
Oh, love
it. And they built a car. Yeah. And as a 6-year-old, I'm like, it was the first time I think I ever saw a gasser.
Oh, wow.
You know, now that I think about this.
Makes sense.
And it's on chrome Kragers, and it's got skinnies in front and, you know, big slicks in back and everything. And I'm like, we need, I don't even know, this is before I was building model kits. So I just thought that car was in that box.
Oh, right.
You know, it's like, well, let's whip this out because this is awesome. And his dad came down and said, no, you got to put that away because that says for ages 9 and up or something. Yeah. Yeah, right. And you guys aren't old enough.
Oh, come on. Right. Mr. So-and-so, let us
do it. Exactly. And he put it back on the shelf. And as I think back, it's like, I'm not a parent, but what would I have done there? I think I would have taken the time maybe to build that with the kid.
Yes.
You know, and not just say, well, can't touch that because the box is 8 years old and you're not. Now, the flip side of that is, you know, maybe my friend's dad was like not in the mood to deal with him or me or anybody at that point, and that was his way out. And he's like, oh, look. Today, you're not old enough, so whatever. So I can't really fault him there. But that model kit left a mark, and I forgot about it for a million years. And then recently, because, you know, you can find stuff on the internet, an image of it popped up somewhere. And I was like, oh, yeah, I would love to do that car because it never got built.
Oh, wow.
It's probably still in that box in the basement. I mean, it's crazy.
We got to get a hold of that guy.
Yeah, no kidding. So I found one on, and it was interesting because the kit was originally released in 69, and then it was re-released in 1970 with a different color scheme. Mm-hmm. And the version that I saw was released in 73, and then it had been released 4 or 5 more times over the years, mm-hmm. up until just a few years ago. And the latest version is this horrible drab green. And
yeah.
It's nowhere near as cool as that first one was.
Not even.
But they want big money for these things. You know, I found this thing for $65-70 was a cheap one. And on eBay, you know, some of the 1973 red, white, and blue versions, they're like $150.
That's insane.
Right. So I'm not comfortable doing that.
No.
So
I mean, I like to spend your money, but even I'm not comfortable with that.
Well, yeah. And I texted you the version that was the $65 one. And you're like, yeah, you know, you should get that because that's how you are. That's what you always tell me.
I want you to get what you want, man.
Yeah, right. So I finally got the, you know, the guts to put it in the shopping cart and hit the button and hit go. And of course, it pops up saying, no, this is out of stock.
Yeah.
So they're advertising that they have this kit, but they don't. So I was like, oh, crap. Mm-hmm. But that sent me down kind of the rabbit hole of looking at the other versions, the newer versions, to see if you could build the 1973 version using the modern kit. And the modern kit has like black painted bumpers and different wheels and stuff. But it turns out that there's a guy on YouTube doing an unboxing video of the newer one, and he reveals that it actually comes with chrome bumpers.
Oh, fantastic.
And it comes with the 409 with the supercharger and the fender well headers, and it's got everything in it except the decals are different. And you could certainly build the earlier one.
Yeah.
And there are people that make reproduction or just custom standalone sheets of decals.
Oh, wow.
That you can buy. And the decals on this particular gasser, it has stars on the front. You paint the nose blue and it's got these white stars. And then the perimeter along the bottom is logos, you know, STP and Winds and, you know, all these, you know, hooker headers and all these cool drag race logos. And you can buy sheets of those on eBay for like $4. So, you know, you can do all that.
Nice.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, maybe I will do one of these things, and now I'm finding that the later version is also like $40 or $50.
Yeah.
There's a guy on eBay selling one for $29.95 and $30 to ship it.
Got him.
I know, totally. It's like, wow.
Oh, gee whiz. That's, come on, you guys.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I haven't built a model in years, but I used to do it a lot as a kid. And yeah, it really, same. in the wintertime, it seemed to me like it was either in the wintertime or in like the dead heat of the summer. Mm. Was model building time. And I'd go in the basement, and it was
a little bit cooler.
Yeah, it was cooler in the basement. And, you know, I had the radio on, and I had my model kit, and I was, you know, probably all hopped up on sugar and caffeine from drinking Dr.
glue
Peppers.
Fumes.
Glue fumes, exactly, you know. And nobody knew where I was, so I was kind of out of the line of fire to clean my room and all that stuff. It was just kind of a blissful experience, you know, spray paint fumes in the basement. Oh man, did I get my ass, I got my ass handed to me once because I painted one of these models in the basement, this beautiful dark blue color, and I painted the upright, you know, the pillar post that is a support in my basement. The basement was finished for the most part, and my dad had done all the work, and I just painted this white column blue overspray all over it. He was not happy about that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm shocked.
Yeah, I'm kind of disappointed that I didn't think just to paint it white over. You know, I could have just got the can of white paint and
fixed it.
Gotten
away with it, yep.
And for the rest of the existence of that house, it was blue overspray.
It's amazing how the young mind doesn't work sometimes.
Doesn't work, yeah. Oh, so I mean, I'd listen to the radio, and I remember, you know, when certain songs came out and hit the airwaves for the first time, that's when I heard them. You know, when I was doing the models.
Oh, absolutely.
And then waiting for the cement to dry, you know, you read Cartoons Magazine, you know,
perfect.
Flip through Hot Rod. So, just kind of starting to replay that. That experience, and that's what kind of made me think of this model kit. It's like, that was a pretty good escape.
Yeah. One which we need to revive.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And we had a pretty good local hobby shop that I used to go to, that had, they specialized in trains. Mm. So they had everything from, I guess they're called G scale, the LGB.
Oh, G scale is real.
They're giant.
Yeah, this giant scale. I was thinking N scale, which is the tiny one.
No, the G, they're the ones that you see in people's gardens.
Yeah, right.
Indoor,
right,
outdoor.
Right.
So from those all the way down to Z scale, which is smaller than N.
Oh, wow.
Z scale is tiny.
How do they do that? My gosh.
I don't even know how you see them.
It's like a little slot car motor to power that, maybe.
If that, yeah.
Yeah.
So. And then they had brass trains and, you know, Lionel and, and, you know, anything you can imagine. And on the car side, they had this aisle of model kits. And on the left side was cars. And on the right side, it was airplanes and ships and tanks and, and all that kind of stuff. And I remember the car side started off with the snap together kits, and then it got progressively more advanced as it went down the row.
I remember snap together kits. Snap
tight.
Yeah.
Snap tight, right. And so my very first ones, of course, were snap together because I was probably 6 or 7.
Right.
And then I remember, you know, being able to go down the aisle a little bit and get something a little more advanced because I got glue and, you know, I could
maybe
paint
a little
them
spray paint with it. Yeah.
Yeah. It was fun. It was cool.
Yeah, I think Testers dominates the market in model paint.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And Tamiya. So it got me thinking about, you know, trying to remember some of these cars that I built, because I still think a lot of them are cool. You know, there was a monogram 69 Camaro model that I remember came out really nice and whatever. So the other day, I was kind of looking at eBay and looking at other stuff, and I'm just trying to make this little catalog of, you know, remembering some of these model kits. And what I actually found is a website that has scans of model car company catalogs.
Oh, really?
So there's like the Revell catalog from 1979, 1980, 81, 82, all the way up through the 80s, and Monogram and AMT and MPC and
yeah.
and Johan and all those companies that made these kits. And I was like, oh, man. And I'm starting to click on them. I'm like, yep, I built that one. I built that one. That one sucked. I built that one.
Nice. Nice. I remember I built this this nice C4 Corvette. That just came out because this was probably 83, 84 when the C4 came out, and I liked it and I had a little showcase for it and everything. They put it in, and my brother and I ended up blowing it up with firecrackers.
Ah, nice. Yeah, yeah.
That was good stuff.
Well, you were demonstrating the crossfire injection.
Yeah, by blowing the hell out of it.
Crossfire cracker injection.
Yep.
I wasn't a guy that blew them up because I put a lot of time into building them, you know, so not that they were anything super special. That hobby shop that I would buy them at, they had an annual model car contest. So and it was a pretty good scam for them. They're like, yeah, you got to come here and buy this thing from us.
So it
drove sales for them. And
sure.
And then in the front window of the store, they would have this display and, you know, all the different classes, and you'd enter your stuff.
Yeah.
And I participated in that, you know, probably 3 or so years or something like that during that time period. And I'll never forget, I spent a ton of time doing a 69 Charger.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually a Dukes of Hazzard General Lee model that I didn't build as the General Lee. I painted it blue and black interior and changed the wheels on it and made this little diorama. So it was a square piece of plywood that had a road painted on it. And I painted like burnout marks.
Nice.
And for some reason I felt that this car needed a white lightning bolt on the roof. So I remember putting masking tape on the roof and taking an X-Acto knife and cutting out this little lightning bolt and then spraying it and then peeling off the masking tape. And the thickness of the white paint was like, you know, comparatively like 2 inches higher than the car. It was just this giant thing on the roof. And then there was these cut marks in my blue paint for when I missed with the X-Acto knife, you know. But I, you know, this was a big attempt for me. And I actually kind of rubbed the paint out and everything, and it looked pretty good. And I bring it to the hobby shop, and I'm thinking, this is a winner, you know. And some dude showed up with a mid-year Corvette, like a 67 Corvette, that was all airbrushed, and it was candy red, and it had foil chrome trim and all this stuff. And I just got completely blown out of the water. I was like, damn.
Oh, man. I thought I was decent at building models until I saw like a model show like that. And I didn't even dawn on me the level of detail that people would go to building these models. Some guys were making actual little plug wires.
Oh yeah.
And attaching to the distributor in the correct firing order, hand painting the block with all the proper factory colors that the engine is supposed to be. I mean, everything is detailed to a T. And I'm looking at this piece of crap I built that I didn't paint. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm the worst human being in the world. I'm complete garbage. I got to get out of here. I can't even look at this.
Yeah. Well, I put a lot of time into doing those those cars. And the 1 year, I entered probably 3 or 4, and I did a 55 Ford panel truck. And it was kind of a street machine. It was lowered, and it had slotted mags, and I painted it red. And I thought I would kind of up my game and upholster the inside.
Ooh, nice.
Right? So what do you do for upholstery? Because this panel van was leaning towards like a custom van.
Okay.
You know, with like interior and stuff. So I took this, I had a blown out red sweatshirt. And I cut the sweatshirt. And I made this red shag out of the sweatshirt material inside the panel van, right? And then, of course, on my little note card that expounded all the virtues of my wonderful build, fully upholstered interior with red shag.
Nice.
And I actually won with that thing.
Holy cow, right on.
Yeah, and what was the prize? I got another model kit, and it was an MPC-branded Dodge Omni, I think.
Oh, boy.
It was like
Was it a GLH?
No, it was just this blue stock Dodge Omni, and I'm like, this is a letdown.
Oh, man. Be sure to drink your Ovaltine.
Yeah, because I'm thinking, they're like, yeah, you can win a kit. You know, so I'm thinking if you win, you go in, you pick something.
Yeah.
Whatever you want or whatever, or out of these. And they're like, no. So they would take the kits that were never going to sell.
Yeah.
Give those as the prizes, you know. Too funny.
Oh, man. And off you go into the world, ever so wiser.
Well, you know, I'm realizing that today's kind of a therapy session.
Well, I'm glad I can help however I can.
As I'm telling these stories, I'm thinking this maybe has a lot to do with how I am today.
Dodge Omni!
Yeah. But, you know, again, I never blew them up, but I don't know what happened to a lot of these, because they're all gone. Hmm. And I think I would put them like back in the box, and then I would stack the boxes in the corner behind the door kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I know on several occasions that tower had collapsed.
Oh, no.
And they all fell over, and I had to fix a bunch of them or whatever. But I think at some point they all got thrown out.
Maybe they're somewhere in your mom's garage.
They're not.
No?
No. When my parents moved, they didn't move them. They were gone. It's like they just kind of disappeared off the radar.
Yeah, amazing how that happens.
Yep. And here I am today, you know, trying to recapture. But
well, a little bit here and there is not a bad thing. So
no, I don't think so. And I think getting back to that 53 Gasser, that is a vehicle that needs to be built for real.
It is.
It is so cool. And if you did a W-head 409 with, you know, a Detroit diesel blower on it, you know, 671 yes. or something, and again, slotted mags, just old school stuff, that would be a showstopper anywhere it went.
Agreed.
And it would be a handful of drive. It'd probably be fast as hell, too.
Oh, yeah. It'd be ridiculous. You
know? Yeah. So maybe if I do build one, we can shop the idea to somebody who thinks the same way, that wants to own the real one.
Get it to lay down nines at the track? How good would that be?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And it wouldn't be LS powered.
Nope. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. That would be a tragedy if you built something like that and LS'd it.
Yeah. Well, it would be a companion to the Mr. Chevy Gasser, you know.
Oh, for sure.
We could do match races.
Oh, man.
Oh, how cool would that be?
I think Larry would be down with that.
He would. You'd have the gold Mr. Chevy and then the red, white, and blue panel.
And build another truck to match it as well.
Oh, yeah. Hauler.
You got to do the whole thing, man.
Oh, dude. See if I can do it in 1/24th scale first. And
I think
then,
we got something here.
Yeah, we got another plan.
Nice.
Yes, hopefully Kelly's not listening at this point.
speaking of Kelly, when I let her know that I was getting my heads back from Eric, she said, okay, good. So springtime, we're going to have that back on the road, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. The needle moves every time you talk to her. You know.
Yeah, so. It does. I got to be careful with what I say.
But that's how stuff gets done.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. Yeah.
So. All righty. Well, I know that people in countries that we're not even aware of right now are holding their breath saying, what is the answer to these riveting trivia questions?
This went by fast today.
Yeah. That's, you know, new year.
New year, new us. All right.
So your question was, what manufacturer serialized cars with odd numbers for competition and even numbers for street use? Now, I first guessed Ford, and then I landed on Ferrari.
Right. You said Ford. I think you were pretty set on that answer until I allowed you an escape route on that one, and then you said Ferrari. And congratulations, Kevin. First trivia question of 2021. You're correct. It is Ferrari.
Oh, wow.
Nicely done. Nicely done.
That was luck.
I love watching your mind work through these questions. This is awesome.
Well, I'm just happy that it still kind of works.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
After all this crap I've been through recently. Mm-hmm. Wow, I can't believe that.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, when that question came up on that Haggerty, I'm like, oh, I'm screenshotting that. I'm using that immediately.
That was a good one, because if you didn't know, you had to apply some logic to it, some reality to it.
Yeah, I got that one correct too, but I had multiple choice to help me out with that one.
Good job.
Thank you.
Okay, so my question to you was, where did the mouse nickname come from?
Yeah.
And you told us about Ed Big Daddy Roth, who created Rat Fink, and he's the guy who one day just named the mouse the Mouse Mouse.
That's right, man. Well, that's wrong, man.
Well, I don't know the actual correct answer to where this, because it's kind of a mythical thing, you know. But there are some accepted answers that most people go by.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm using. And unfortunately, none of them contain Big Daddy Roth.
Really? Come
on. Surprising as that sounds. But so the most correct answer that I'm going with, it's actually pretty fun. In the mid-60s, when the Chrysler Hemi was, you know, becoming kind of dominant.
Mm-hmm.
There were some Chevrolet powered cars with small blocks, you know, like maybe a DZ302, you know, Camaro, or maybe a Corvette with a 327 or some hot motored, you know, small block that were giving some of the Hemi cars a run for their money.
Mm.
So people, of course, the Hemi car, the Hemi engine's nickname is the elephant.
The elephant.
Because it's so big. And what is an elephant afraid of?
A mouse.
Yeah.
And that makes so much sense.
Well, it does, but it's a crazy thing. You wouldn't think that, you know?
Clearly, I did not think that.
Well, I didn't either. And then I was reading about this, and I'm like, I was just wondering, you know, because there's a lot of different engine nicknames.
Mm-hmm.
The Ford shotgun. Where did that come from? You know,
never heard of it.
Yeah, well, that's a trivia question.
God dang it! I'm gonna start researching that immediately.
And of course, the big block being the big version that just naturally became the rat.
Right.
If this is a mouse, and that's got to be a rat. You know.
Yeah. So. Well, I will accept that as a bona fide answer.
Mm-hmm. The other one was that the small block Chevy came out in '55, and somebody in the late 50s, for some reason, just named it Mighty Mouse after the cartoon, and maybe that stuck. So that's another part of the mythology. Maybe. But I really like that elephant story.
I do too. Yeah, now that you say it, that kind of jogs a memory. I may have heard or read that in Hot Rod somewhere back in the day. So that's very plausible. That's the actual answer, but I do seem to recall something like that along the lines.
Yeah, like maybe at the super stock drags, you know, if a Chevy 2 with a V8 was beaten on something, I don't know. So to our listener, if you know and you want to share with us, feel free to send it in.
Dig it.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, I think this is a good episode. I think we expressed our thoughts on creeping into 21 with high hopes, but maybe not super high expectations.
Realistic expectations, I say.
Yeah, and hope we're proven wrong.
Yeah.
And that events can come back and everything else changes. So
yeah, we need events back.
Yeah, it all needs to be back.
Mm-hmm.
Right on. Well, if you're listening to this, wherever you are, click the subscribe button if there is one. We're carried in a lot of different places, and like I always say, if you already heard this, you know where to find us.
Mm-hmm.
But it does help to subscribe. Leave us a review too. We've gotten some really good reviews on the Apple Podcasts, which are always fun and entertaining to read.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe next time we'll share a few of those and do some shout outs.
Dick it.
Yeah, right on. All right, man. You got anything else?
No, man, I'm just wallowing in the sadness of my poor answer.
I'm still stunned in disbelief that I landed on the correct answer.
I'm not. I kind of figured you'd get to it just because of how you are.
Well, you did leave a little door open, so
yeah, I did.
Appreciate that.
I did. Yeah, I'm cool like that. I'm an enabler. Yeah. What can I tell you?
Yeah, well, when you started talking about the Rat Fink, I'm not sure there was any door I could open.
No. I closed that and locked it and barred it when I said that. I left you no option.
Nice. All right, well, this was fun, and I guess we will see everybody next time on our next episode of VA Radio. So for Mr. Mike Hubal Clark, I'm Kevin Oste reminding you to keep the shiny side under 100. We'll see you next time.